What's going on? Bernie Miklos back with you a little later than I wanted to today, but things are kind of hectic and it still feels like a snow day. Not that I was allowed to play hooky. I'm keeping busy. My camera was working today, but I got a new one on the way. I'm a little bit fancier. Hopefully we'll hold up better. This one driving me crazy. Anyway, good to have you with us here on the Bernie Miklos Show. A couple things I want to talk about today. You know, I was looking at the Cardinals roster as it stands now. And as it stands now, of course, on that roster is Nolan Arenado. And then there's some other things. If you just look at the roster today, obviously there will be some changes. I would expect their starting rotation to get a little younger. You know, there's going to be at least some movement in the bullpen. I don't know if they're going to acquire or sign an older guy, you know, to serve in the bullpen, or maybe another younger guy or two. So I'm not in any way, shape, or form claiming that this is going to be the state of the Cardinals on opening day. So I just wanted to make that clear. But as you know, I've been a tad skeptical about the whole youth movement thing, because I don't think, you know, they've gone far enough with it. They could get younger by auctioning off a couple of their veterans who are going to become free agents at the end of the season. And I don't see the Cardinals ponying up for either one of them. And that would be the closer Ryan Helsley and a starting pitcher Eric Fetty. You know, the Cardinals wanted to be aggressive about whatever they're calling this movement, other than keep telling the media, oh, we're going to provide runway for our younger guys. By the way, that word runway is overused by sports media now. You see it everywhere. And don't get me wrong, I overuse certain words myself, so I'm guilty as charged. But anyway, there's not a situation where it looks to me like the Cardinals, at least so far, again, it's going to be changing, but like where we stand today on January the 7th, it doesn't look like the Cardinals are going to be all that much younger, considering that Arenado is at least now still here. So what I did is I took the 10 primary position players that I think are going to be here. Well, they are here as of now. We're talking about, in no particular order, Mason Wynn, Alec Burleson, Wilson Contreras, Nolan Gorman, Nolan Arenado, Lars Nootbaar, Michael Ciani, two catchers, Pedro Pajes and Ivan Herrera, Brendan Donovan, and also Thomas Sejesi, provided he's going to be on the team. He will be if Arenado's traded, but it's a little murky if Arenado stays. So those 10 position players have an average age that's just under 30 years. And I'm not saying that's old, right? I'm not saying it's old at all. But it averages about 29.7 years. And if you're going to have a youth movement, maybe I'm being a dummy. Wouldn't be the first time. And I thought maybe the average age of their position players would be younger than that. After all, you know, I went to Baseball Reference and I was looking around at all of their hitters, the average age of the Cardinals in 2024. Their hitters averaged about the same age. It kind of surprised me a little bit, but their hitters last year, where is it? I lost this information. I'm looking for it. Where is it? Where'd you go? You know, it was actually younger last season by a little bit. I mean, it was something like, don't know why I lost this, but I think it was something like, you know, 27 years old, 27 plus years old. And I can probably find that just by going to Baseball Reference, which is what I should have done in the first place. But this is sort of driving me nuts now, so I'm going to find it, even though this is actually really bad of me in terms of getting to the point. So I need some music to play in the background when I'm looking all these things up. So the Cardinals' average age of their position players last year, I found it, 27.6 years. So based on the 10 guys that would be the primary guys, I think, in 2025, if Arenado stays, it's a situation where they would have an average age of 29.6. Now, if you add Victor Scott to the mix, he's 24 or he'll be 24 during next season. It goes down a little bit. It goes down, not by much, but a little bit. It goes down to about 29.1 years average age. So I don't know about you. I mean, maybe, again, feel free to tell me, well, you're overreacting. I don't think I'm overreacting. I'm just pointing something out. And again, subject to change. I just thought the number would be a little lower if you're going to do a youth movement. That's all. But is it really a youth movement? Because most of the guys are going to get playing time are guys that have already gotten playing time for the Cardinals. They're going to get a little more, but how much will that matter? Well, that's yet to be determined. That's what's interesting about the 2025 season. So if you look at the starting, by the way, and I didn't look at the bullpen because I think the bullpen is always subject to change. Relievers come and go, come and go, come and go. So I'm limiting this little mini study to position players and to the starting rotation. So if you look at the five starters who would be in there right now, Sonny Gray is 35. Eric Fetty will be 32 next season. Miles Michaelis will be 36, but he'll turn 37 later next season. Steven Matz is 34. Palante is, I wouldn't call him a baby, but he's about 25, 26. And yeah, you added that all up, and the five starters have an average age of about 32.7 years old. And that's after taking Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson out of there. Now, obviously, the Cardinals would get younger in the rotation if they clear some people out of there. Michael McGreevy is 25 years old, the top prospect they have. Quinn Matthews is 24 years old. Tink Hentz, if he becomes part of this crew later on in 2025, he's 25 years old. Gordon Graceffo, and I don't know whether they're going to consider him as a starter if they need one. Maybe he'll be in the bullpen. He's 25. And, you know, there's some other guys down there. I'm not going to go through a whole roll call of everybody in the organization. But, yeah, the Cardinals starting rotation could get younger. So I don't know, man. I just find it interesting. I thought there'd be more to this youth movement or whatever we're calling it. And part of the reason is the fact that Arenado's still here. And I know you're fatigued by Arenado talk. I mean, I can't say I'm fatigued, but I understand why you would be fatigued. But I wanted to introduce another concept to this. You know, the Cardinals had a very limited market for Arenado services in their attempts to trade him, right? And I think they're making it more difficult because they're kind of, at least for now, subject to change. It could be negotiating tactics to get a better deal for Arenado or to get another team to concede in terms of how much money they expect the Cardinals to put in to cover the cost of his contract. So anyway, but in this quest to find him a new home, and that's been going on for a while now, I thought he would have been gone by now. And I think the Cardinals thought that too, but the market wasn't much of a market for him other than the Houston Astros who really wanted him. And he said no. And his agent at the time left the door open. Well, he just doesn't want to make a decision this soon. In other words, like, well, I can do better than the Astros. Okay, well, we'll see. But the Astros said, okay, that's all right. We'll just give $60 million to Christian Walker, put him at first base, and Isaac Paredes, who we were going to move from third base to first base because he can play both. If we acquired Arenado, well, he'll just go back to third. So Arenado, maybe lost a chance to get to a ballpark that could help him a little bit. People talk about Fenway Park. I shot that down yesterday. I even got more on that. I don't know if anybody's interested. But can I just leave you with a very shorthand version of it? People talk about Fenway Park being something. If he would go to the Red Sox, they're talking about Fenway Park being something that can cure Nolan Arenado's power drop, right? Well, it's Fenway Park, man. You know, short porch, baby. You got the big green monster. Whoa, you know, doubles, homers, way more doubles and homers for Arenado. He's reborn in Boston. Hold on to that. Yeah, just maybe maybe calm down a little bit on that. It's one of those narratives that I love to puncture, right? Because there's so many stupid narratives. And this is one of them. And the fact is like no one's slowing down. People in the media and fans just keep repeating it over and over again. Fenway Park, oh my goodness, tailor made for Arenada. I would say nada to that. You know why? Simple, shorthand, largely stat-free piece of information I did after researching this today. Do you know that right-handed batters for the Boston Red Sox, and Arenado's a right-handed hitter, you know that right-handed batters for the Boston Red Sox had a higher batting average, a higher slugging percentage, they hit more home runs, and they had more doubles on the road last season than they did at Fenway Park? It's a true fact. Listen, I realize that facts pretty much no longer matter in today's culture. I get it. So the people pushing this Fenway Park narrative, they'll continue to insist they're right, even though there's a pretty significant body of evidence that says, nope, that would be nice for Arenado, but that is wrong. You know, Fenway Park once upon a time, I think, probably did play better for right-handed hitters. But that hasn't been the case, at least not in 2024. And hitters at Fenway Park, this is Boston's right-handed hitters. Last year, were slightly below average at Fenway Park. And, well, actually, it was more than slightly below average. If we're talking about, you know, weighted runs created plus, 100 is average. Their right-handed batters at Fenway last year they were 8% below the league average offensively. They had a WRC plus of 92. On the road, they were 2% above league average offensively. That's a 10-point swing between their home ballpark and their road performance. But during the 12 minutes I've spoken to this, there's probably been 25 more people talking about, well, boy, hey, Arenado will make a big comeback if he gets to Fenway, right? Oh, watch out. Watch out. And just as I said that, there are like 5 or 6 more media people that are spinning this false narrative. Okay, whatever. I would like to see Nolan Arenado do better. I would like to have a big, 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 big time belief that he would do better if he's going to be with the Cardinals. But there's just not a lot of, you know, you never rule anything out. There's a chance he could do slightly better or whatever. And I know he's working hard. But my point is that there's just not a lot of statistical evidence. There's not a lot of data that backs that up, that supports that optimism. That's all I'm saying. All right, let me get on to the thing that I think where the Cardinals are getting in their own way. You know, they're making it more difficult because, first of all, you know, Arenado's got his no trade clause, and that limits the number of teams that the Cardinals can talk to because, you know, Arenado ain't going to go to the Washington Nationals, or he's not going to go to Seattle, or he's not going to go to Kansas City. He's not going to go to any number of teams that could use a third baseman, right? So he can flash that no trade card. If getting out of St. Louis is the only thing that matters to him, then, you know, he would agree to go just about any place, but he's not going to do that. And his agent has said that over and over again. He's not going to do that. He's going to be very selective about where he's willing to go. So you got his no trade clause that's there, and it's his right. It's contractual right. I support it. Support him with this 100%. But the Cardinals, at least in their apparent negotiating strategy, are making it more difficult to move him. You know, so Arenado's got the no trade clause, and the Cardinals have a just say no policy when it comes to their willingness to digest a substantial portion of Arenado's remaining guaranteed contract. The outstanding Katie Wu of The Athletic reported on this Tuesday, and let me just read you something she wrote. If you didn't read it, and if not, you didn't read it, you should, and you should subscribe to The Athletic. It's outstanding. You also get Jeremy Rutherford on the Blues over there, and The Price is Right. Heck, when I wrote for The Athletic before COVID, I was still subscribing to The Athletic. I thought it was so great. Anyway, here's what Katie reported on the Arenado Cardinal situation for The Athletic earlier Tuesday. Quote, the financial stipulations have complicated the team's trade attempts. The Cardinals will not take on a large sum of Arenado's contract just for the sake of moving him. They are looking for a team to take on the majority of his remaining $74 million over three seasons. The situation becomes more complex when you factor in Arenado's full no-trade clause. Yes, it does. And again, I know this. This is probably some negotiation, hardball, if anybody's calling the Cardinals other than the Red Sox, and the Red Sox might not want Arenado. Certainly, I doubt that they would want him if they are able to sign Alex Bregman as a free agent. I think Arenado represents a fallback position, and even then, they'd have to move Devers to first base and trade their first baseman, in all likelihood, Tristan Casas. So even if they want Arenado, they're going to have to move some furniture around, and maybe they'll decide it's just not worth it. But they have, as I mentioned yesterday, have a lot of ground ball starting pitchers, and they could really, really shore up that defense on the left side of the outfield with a healthy Trevor Story at short and Arenado at third. So I'm aware that the Cardinals could be just, this is a contract ploy or negotiating ploy where they're going to get the other side. If there is another team to be willing to take more of a share of Arenado's contract instead of trying to put a lot more of it back on the Cardinals, right? So if they're not willing, if Bill DeWitt Jr. and Jal Mozeliak are not willing to eat a bigger piece of the contract, then the probability of trading Arenado, I believe, first of all, it's already low. Right now, there's one team out there that we're talking about. So the probability of trading them, which is already kind of getting down to slim and none time, right, will only continue to decrease. And here's where, if the Cardinals remain rigid in their espoused stance on this, as Katie Wu, and I trust her reporting, absolutely. You know, if they're going to remain rigid and not, you know, back in, you know, not back down at all on what they're willing to pay part of the contract to get Arenado a new home, if they're not willing to budge on that, I have to say that I would find that very difficult to understand, and I'll explain why. First of all, Arenado's former team is responsible for $10 million of his $74 million. So that really makes it a $64 million contract guaranteed through 2027. So that would leave $64 million for the Cardinals or a new team to cover in some shared way. It's just a matter of what percent would be picked up by the Cardinals and what percent the new team, his new team, would be responsible for. Now, it was said that the Cardinals were willing to maybe put in 15% to get the Houston Astros more comfortable with the idea of adding Arenado. They were willing to pick up 15%. I would think a team like Boston would, if it comes down to that, if that's a big if, Alex Bregman holds the key to everything. I would think maybe the Red Sox would ask for more, because the Red Sox are still trying to sign free agents and they're still trying to do other things. And they're still trying to maybe find some expensive pieces for their bullpen. So I'm sure the Red Sox will ask the Cardinals to pick up more of Arenado's contract. So I played with just a hypothetical. So let's just say the Cardinals absorbed 25% of the salary that's owed to Arenado through 2027. And if they absorbed 25% of that, it would come to about $21.3 million. So that means a trade partner would be on the hook for the remaining $42.67 million over the next 3 years. 25%, that means the Cardinals are picking up $21.3 million of the total cost, leaving $42.7 million for the new team. So if you look at it this way, you know, if the new team gets him after the Cardinals have eaten 25% of the cost, that would reduce Arenado's annual average salary to about $14.23 million. And at that pay grade, interested teams, I would imagine, in fact, you may get more teams coming to the table if the Cardinals would be willing to eat 25% of it. The Yankees are such a team, for example, at least if we're looking for candidates. Are they really going to go with DJ LeMahieu? 37 years old. He slugged about 360 the last 4 years. He's broken down all the. Is that really what they're going to do at third base? I heard a podcast with Sean Casey, the former Major League first baseman who was formerly a Yankees coach. He was just saying, absolutely, the Yankees need to go get Arenado. Move Chisholm to second. They just signed Max Fried, who's got the highest ground ball rate in the majors. You better play some great defense over on that left side of your infield. And Anthony Volpe and Arenado would give, no doubt, would give the Yankees an upgraded defense. And Chisholm playing second base is very athletic there. So, yeah, I'm with Sean Casey. That actually makes a lot of sense. So the Yankees are probably playing hardball too. My point, if the Cardinals are at least offering 25 to pick up 25% of the salary, that might entice some other teams to come a knocking, because at a salary of $14.23 million average per year over 3 years, at that pay grade, teams, I think, I would imagine, who covet his defense would feel a lot more comfortable about pursuing Arenado based primarily on his defensive value. And his defensive value is good. It is still really good. It's not the same as it was when we were all putting him in a category with, you know, Scott Rolen, Brooks Robinson, Mike Schmidt, you know what I'm saying? We're like one of the greatest of all time. He's not at that level, like in terms of his current state. He's still one of the greatest third baseman defensively of all time. But I'm just saying his current standard is not up to that standard, but it's still damn good is all we're trying to say. And you knew that already. The other thing, if the Cardinals agree to handle 25%, heck, even 30% of Arenado's remaining salary obligation, they would likely receive a better return in a trade. And I'm not, listen, man, I'm very realistic about this. There's a lot of red flags with Arenado's performance offensively, even more than I relayed to you yesterday in a lengthy video about this. I've been discovering even more stuff. So the Cardinals, though, if the more money that they're willing to pay to get Arenado into a new home, you figure they would probably get a more appealing return in terms of quality of a prospect or two. It ain't going to be anything dramatic, but they'd have a better chance of actually getting something out of the deal in 2 or 3 years if they get a prospect or two that ultimately pays off. That's all. But by picking up 25 or even 30% of the tab in a trade, the Cardinals, let's just stick it with 25%. If they pick up 25%, the Redbirds would, number one, get Arenado out of here. Number two, they would save nearly $43 million going forward in terms of payroll, right? $43 million they would save over the next 3 years. Those 3 years added together, they would create an opening for Nolan Gorman to play third base. And they really, really, really want to do that. And with Arenado gone, the vacancy probably leads to a more prominent role for rookie infielder Thomas Sagesi with the big ball club in 2025. It would also, moving Arenado and saving money and getting that runway ready for Nolan Gorman at third base and that runway for Thomas Sagesi, it would also eliminate the potential for distractions and discord and general unhappiness, because if Arenado is smack dab in the middle of a retooling, a resetting, a rebuilding, a reordering, a reshaping, a remaking, a remodeling, or any other damn R word you want to use, right? I don't think he'd be a happy man here, especially if the Cardinals say, you know, Nolan, you even said it in an offseason interview. You said it after last season, and you said it again. you work so hard, you know, and you've had back problems, and you even acknowledge that you probably work too hard. It's commendable that you work so hard, but you even acknowledge in an interview with Katie Wu that, you know, it's probably not good for you to just basically work yourself into fatigue and exhaustion, and maybe get that back, you know, creaking up again, right? Getting a little creaky. So they said, well, you know, instead of 100, he's averaged 140 starts at third as a Cardinal. So, you know, we think it'd be good for you, and it probably, we hope, would keep you fresher, maybe keep your bat speedier or whatever. If we're gonna try to start you about 100 games at third base, maybe 95 to 100 games. How do you think that would go over? Yeah, not too well, right? So anyway, I'm just at a loss, and you know, I know again that we're talking about a negotiating tactic here, as far as what the Cardinals are willing to pay to get someone to take Arenado off their hands. Given all the things I explained to you, and given all of the savings that they would realize long term on their payroll over the next three seasons, why would Chairman Bill DeWitt Jr. and President of Baseball Ops John Mozeliak balk at this? Am I missing something here? If so, Mo, shoot me a text and explain this. And Mr. DeWitt, shoot me a text. I look forward to hearing from you. And if I'm missing something, I'll be happy to report back to subscribers of the Bernie Miklas channel here on YouTube. I'll report back and tell them, well, here's the part I'm missing or I overlooked. Anyway, that's going to do it for today. And I enjoy your comments. I have not had much time to answer. And when I do answer, can I be honest? I get triggered sometimes. Maybe this is another video, but all these people that have been coming on to say, Bernie, in St. Louis, you know, our goal is winning the World Series championship. That's our franchise legacy. So why would you say the Cardinals ought to emulate Tampa Bay and Cleveland? Bernie, they've never, the Guardians haven't won a World Series since 1948. Tampa Bay's never won one. So why should we, the high and mighty, haughty Cardinals, why should we emulate those teams? They've never won anything. Oh, my goodness. Maybe because they're trying to restore something that used to be a major strength. Really, really smart drafting and developing of players and being way ahead of the curve in terms of technology and a lot of other things to make those young players really, really good before they get to the major leagues, either pitchers or position players, and they contribute. And a lot of them contributed to the World Series championship in 2011 and the National League pennant winning season of 2013. The 100-win season in 2015, and even in 2006, there were some young Cardinals farmhands who rose to the major league level to help in a big way. Remember this rookie closer that had to step in when Jason Isringhausen needed hip surgery? Wainwright, I think is his name. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. He was drafted by the Braves, but he was a young prospect when Walt Jocketty got him from Atlanta for J.D. Drew and whatever the else was in the exchange. But so my point is that, no, the Cardinals need to get a better job at drafting and developing players, okay? And no one has been doing that. Or, you know, let's just say in the top three or four teams for a long, long time, no one's been doing this better. Well, the Dodgers are always great, but than Cleveland and Tampa Bay. They have a phenomenal track record, but the difference is they haven't won a World Series because, you know, especially with Tampa Bay, you don't, that's the point. Teams that have the 28th payroll out of 30, they're not going to win World Series. But Tampa Bay has outpunched its weight class repeatedly over and over and over again. And Cleveland Well, actually, over the last 10 seasons, Cleveland and Tampa Bay have been in a World Series. The Cardinals have not. And Cleveland and Tampa Bay have each won more regular season games and more postseason games than the Cardinals over the last 10 years. And it's not even close, really. Not in the postseason. So when one team has an average payroll of 23, that would be the Guardians over the last 10 years, and Tampa Bay has an average payroll size of 28th, it really greatly reduces their odds of winning a World Series. It can still be done, but it's a long shot. It's amazing to me that they were able, especially Tampa Bay, they were able to get to a World Series. And that happened in 2008, and it happened again in the COVID season. So why are Cardinals, I don't understand, and I realize that this is a minority view, because I've been gratified by many of you, and thank you very much, who really understand, you understood totally the point I was trying to make. The Cardinals have to get back to what they used to be great at, drafting and developing players. And for that specific assignment, Tampa Bay and Cleveland absolutely show you some things you can learn from. And the Cardinals need a lot of learning to do. That's why Bill DeWitt had the wisdom to bring in Heim Bloom, who was part of that draft development operation for a long time at Tampa Bay. And that's why Heim Bloom went and got a rising young star executive from the Cleveland Guardians, Rob Serfolio, who's been a big part of their reasons. Or their reason why their player development system is so great. Why would any Cardinals fan look down at Tampa Bay and Cleveland where they haven't won a World Series? You know, we win the World Series around here. That's the standard. Why would you want to emulate those two teams? What did they want? Well, they've won a lot more than the Cardinals over the last 10 seasons. They got to a World Series, each of them. Cardinals haven't done that. So based on this logic, based on this brilliant logic, the Cardinals should not try to look at what Tampa Bay and Cleveland have done, because the Cardinals are one of the blue bloods. You know, they win world championships. These two teams are just like scrappy little underdogs. What do we have to learn from that? We're above them, Bernie. There's nothing to emulate. We're better than them. We look down on that. All right. So what you're saying is because the Cardinals won a World Series in 1926, 1931, 1934, 1942, 1944, 1946, 1964, 1967, 1982, 2006, 2011. So just because they've won 11 World Series, many of them in ancient times, right, going back to the 40s and earlier, because they've won got those World Series trophies, that means there's nothing to learn with drafting and player development and getting your players ready for the major. There's nothing to learn from Tampa Bay and Cleveland. How many World Series trophies do they have? So based on this bizarre logic, just because the Cardinals won World Series a long time ago, most of them, and even 2006, that's 18, 19 seasons ago, even 2011, what is that, 13, 14 seasons ago? No, we got nothing to learn from those teams. Look at all of our World Series banners. You know what that is? And here's what the people that espouse this, and they're very adamant about it. You know what's interesting about that? They're exhibiting the same behavior that they criticize in Bill DeWitt and Joe Mazzulla, right? Oh, they're arrogant. Those guys are arrogant. You know, they won. They used to win, but they don't win the way they should anymore. They've let the fans down. They got set in their ways. You know, they let the farm system fall apart. Oh, they don't spend enough money. Well, those are the payroll on the brain people, but you get my point. So in other words, like if you're saying there's nothing to learn from Tampa Bay and Cleveland about developing a much better farm system, player development system. Then, because you're the Cardinals who've won 11 World Series, and they haven't, then you are John Mozeliak and you are Bill DeWitt. You have their attitude, the attitude that put them in the damn place that they're in right now, where they have to go out and rebuild their minor league system. My advice, think before you type in a response, okay? I love the people who get it. I want to very much love the people who, at least right now, don't understand this. But I guess I did a little bit of a video on it, right? At least that'll save you from having to watch another one. All right, I'll shut up now. Thank you very much. You all have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow. One of the things Wednesday I'm going to try to get done is picking the winners for the National College Football Playoff, the semifinals. All right, that's all for now. Bye-bye. Thank you.